This is Digital Story Podcast number 727, February 25th, 2020. Today's theme is The Anatomy of a Location Photo Shoot. I'm Derek Story. There are many moving parts to a location photo shoot assignment, and even when you think you have all the bases covered, an unexpected challenge can rear its head. Today, I'll talk about how I prepare and execute an assigned photo shoot on location, and hopefully there'll be a few tips here that you can glean for your next assignment. So, many of the jobs that I get are away from the studio on location, and I'm actually quite fine with that. I mean, I came up through photojournalism. I'm used to shooting out in the world and dealing with people. But one thing I have learned over the years that there are a number of extra little things that you have to take into account when you're away from the comfy confines of your home base. And that's what I want to talk a bit about today, just so that when you're out there and you're doing your thing, what we really want to do is focus on the photography. You know, we just want to zoom in, get the shots that we want, and then, get out of there and load them onto the computer and look at them. But, one of the challenges about working with other people and being out in the world on your shoots is that sometimes there's a lot of noise around that situation, right? And I think that's one of the things that you really have to be ready for is, okay, I want to just laser beam through the photo shoot, but, there's a delay here. Someone didn't show up there. This person has the wrong clothing. The doors are locked to the building we're supposed to be in. All that stuff happens, and you really have to be very zen-like and not let that throw you off your game. That's kind of like the big overarching picture. Now, I also have specific tips and workflow that I'm going to go through here in a second, but I think frame of mind going into it is also important. Sometimes the client will come with you on the shoot, sometimes not. Those bring their own unique set of challenges. A lot of times, people that we work with when we're on location, especially the ones in front of the camera, they may not be practiced in front of the camera or even comfortable or even want to be in front of the camera. Somehow they have been talked into doing this, and it's our job then to make them comfortable. And so, another aspect of this is sometimes you have to talk to people a bit before you actually pull the camera out of the bag. Sometimes I feel like I'm a bartender, right? I'm a bartender, and instead of making small talk and serving drinks, I'm making small talk and taking pictures. So sometimes I feel like I'm a furniture mover, right? Because, you walk in to a room or to a location, the assignment sheet or the client, they have a certain thing that they want. And, other people don't see the things that are in the way. And I find that fascinating. That's both indoors and outdoors. So they just sort of see some little part of the room or of the location that they think will work. And I have had clients not see like giant telephone poles and power lines and all that sort of stuff. They say, you can just stand right here and take the picture, and you're going, wow, do you see all that stuff in front of us, between us and the picture itself? I didn't really notice that. Well, also indoors, a lot of times you just have to move stuff around. You just have to move furniture around. You have to help create an environment that's right for photography, because a comfortable environment for, sitting around and chatting with your friends or having a cold drink or, doing anything, reading, studying, office, all those things, that's often not the perfect environment for taking pictures. One other little thing that I want to mention right now before I forget it, before I get into the actual workflow, is that the camera accentuates space between people. And, one of the things when we're taking shots that has more than one subject in it, they will naturally stand too far apart. And being an American, you know, I can only really speak to American behavior, but Americans like space. They like space between them. They like space. And so they do not like to be that close to other people, especially other people they don't know. But for photography, we have to move them closer. That is just one of the things, because if it looks like a little space between two people, when we're just looking at it with our eyes, it becomes a very big space when you are looking at the picture on the computer screen. It grows, and it's almost magical the way that it does that. So one of the things that we have to do as we're building rapport and as we're, you know, making people comfortable is also have them trust us enough so that when we kind of put them closer together, they understand why we're doing that, not just to torment them, but that actually that is part of the photographic process. And that if we don't do that, the picture just won't look right. And one other little side tip that comes to mind when I'm talking about this stuff is really great if you can have a second set of eyes, whether it's a second shooter, an assistant, someone that's holding the reflectors, whatever. But a second set of eyes to look for those nagging little things that happen. Necklaces that are just a little askew, right? Hair that's just a little out of place, but out of place in a very bad way, like, you know, falling across an eye or something like that. You know, those little things that I don't know what happens to you, but for me, when I'm thinking about, you know, the overall composition, when I'm thinking about getting all the blocking right, when I'm thinking about exposure, color, lighting, all that good stuff, sometimes I miss an unbuttoned button. Sometimes I miss, you know, a thread dangling down. Sometimes I miss a necklace that's just crooked. And I tell you, a crooked necklace is very difficult to fix, especially when you have 80 frames of a crooked necklace. So, you know, those little things, it's really helpful to have someone that can look at those little things for you. And if you don't have someone, then, you know, you're going to have to remind yourself to try to check the details while you're doing the photo shoot. Again, these things are so much easier to fix on the spot than later on in post. Later on in post is not the place you want to deal with these things. Let's get into, you know, the actual workflow of executing one of these things. Alrighty. I have 5 steps to my location photo shoot flow. And we're going to start out with corner the client. That's the first step. So even the best clients believe that we as photographers have special mind reading powers that guide us to the exact shots that they're hoping to receive. And I hate to admit this, but I have no mind reading powers. And I have learned this in relationships. And I have learned this out in the field as a photographer. I do have decent intuition. I have a pretty good eye, but I don't have mind reading power. So what I have to do is actually talk to the client before the photo shoot to find out what is in their brain. And they're going to be sometimes reluctant to really articulate that. They go, oh, you know, just go out and get, you know, the best shot and we'll be happy with it. Well, that's not necessarily true. They may say that beforehand, but then when you bring them back, they go, well, you know, did you get a group shot? Well, no, I thought it was like just individual portraits. Oh, yeah, whoa. We thought you'd do a group shot too. Ow, ooh, that one's tough. Like, what do you do there? Ask them beforehand, that's what you do. Now, for weddings, I get as formal as doing a detailed shot list because really don't want to mess that up. There's no do-overs on a wedding. However, even for regular field assignments, I like to have a phone conversation with the client a few days before I actually go out there. I take notes during that conversation. And then if something comes to me after I think about the conversation, then I'll follow up and ask some follow-up questions. A really good thing to have with whoever is in charge of the photo shoot is their cell phone number. I think it's vital, in fact, because sometimes something will come up and right on location, and they're not there. Let's say that you're doing the job and they're not there. It's really nice to be able to just send them a text message and go, did you want this person in the shot? Because they think they should be in it, and get, you know, a ruling right on the spot. Or somehow someone doesn't show up. Or if you get the location wrong, you know, all these things. So make sure that you talk to the client beforehand. Part of that conversation is, you know, getting what you need for the photo shoot in terms of, you know, the particular shots, but also their cell phone number, you know, whatever contact information that's important, because you may have to follow up with them again later on. Okay, the second thing, and this can really get you if you're not ready for it, make sure that you have your permissions in order. Will you need access to a building, a school, an office? Are model releases required? Are the subjects aware that you're coming, and at what time and for how long, and what you're going to be doing when you're there? You know, all those little things that are important. And again, model releases are very difficult to get after the fact, but they're so easy to get right there at the photo shoot. And again, this is where having an assistant is really nice, because while you're getting set up, the assistant can be getting the model releases signed. For instance, when I work for the junior college here in Santa Rosa, if I take pictures outside, just out in the quad, things like that, I don't need model releases. But if I go inside a classroom and I take pictures in there of students, I do need a model release inside the classroom. And, you know, I have to have that. And if we don't have that, we can't use the shots. Alrighty. So you need to know that kind of stuff. And I think a good time to ask that is when you have your chat with the client, but then follow up and make sure that, like, for instance, if you're supposed to talk to so-and-so about opening the building, you know, 15 minutes before the photo shoot, what I like to do is talk to so-and-so the day before and say, hey, I'm coming by tomorrow. I'm going to be there at 9 a.m. I hear you're going to be there at 9 a.m. to open up the building. You know, my name's Derek. I'm really tall. You can't miss me. You know, here's my cell phone number. You know, that kind of stuff. Make sure that you have printed model releases with you if you need them, or the electronic version if that's what you're using. Get all that stuff in order before the photo shoot, because it can really be a buzzkill during the shoot itself. It really can. And, you know, suddenly if you're scrambling and you just discover that you need model releases and you don't have any with you, it just feels like all the air goes out of the balloon. Alrighty. Number three, pack your equipment the day before. Now, sometimes we have no choice but to grab our camera bag and run out the door. Okay. Most of the time, at least for my assignments, I have the ability to pack the day before. Now, I have a standard kit, a base kit that I use, but I change it out, components of it, depending on what's going on. And what I really like to do, as I think about the shoot, you know, after I've talked to the client, and think about, okay, they're going to want a lot of portraits, so I'm going to need a prime lens, you know, with a shallow depth of field for that. Or I can only get within, you know, 30 feet of the stage. Okay, I'm going to need a longer lens for that. Or I'm going to be working on very indoor confined area. Well, then I'm going to need a wide lens for that. You know, so I like to pack the day before, you know, kind of go through that whole process in my head. That way, when I wake up at midnight, the night before the photo shoot, and I go, ah, I didn't put reflectors in there. I need reflectors. Well, then you're realizing it at midnight, the night before. You just make a little note, put it with your car keys, and that way you'll add the reflectors the next day. It's much better to have that epiphany before you get out there than when you're on location, you go, where are the reflectors? Oh my God, I cannot believe I forgot the reflectors. Packing your equipment the day before really does help eliminate forgetting those certain little items that we all do. We all forget stuff, right? There's 1,000 things we have to remember, and if we get 999 of them, that's great, but a lot of times it's that one we forgot is the one we need. Alrighty. Pack the day before. The fourth one, and I cannot stress this enough, really think about your lighting. This just informs so many other decisions that you're going to make. It impacts everything. Your approach to lighting on the assignment It influences your lens selection, your setup time, your actual shooting time, and of course, the final results. So for instance, if you decide that you're able to go with just natural lighting, well, then you don't need very much setup time, right? But you do realize that you probably have to do a little bit more post-production because you're going to be doing more adjustments for shadows and highlights. It even informs, you know, the overall arc of the assignment. If you're going to be working outdoors and you know you have an assistant or someone to help you, then you know you can bring reflectors. And then reflectors will save you a lot of post-production time, and they make the shots in the camera look a lot better. If you're going to be using strobes, then you have to make sure that you have the batteries, and you can think about, of course, how is that strobe lighting going to work? Do I have a mixed lighting situation? Do I have to worry about balancing the cooler light of the strobes with, you know, fluorescent lighting or something like that? So you need to think about that. Now, I use LED panels a lot indoors, and I use bicolors because that way I can adjust the color of the panel to work in the overall shoot. That saves me a ton of time, but they don't have as much reach as, let's say, a strobe. So then I have to think about proximity. There's all these things that you have to think about. And then the other thing I've discovered when I talk to clients, some clients really do like this nice sort of even, I'll say studio-like lighting for the images. That's what they want to look. Other clients will say, no, we want it to look more like real life. I think they usually mean something like social media or something like that, where it's a little bit more edgy. So you're not going to be opening up the shadows as much, or, you know, balancing the highlights and shadows as much. All of these things influence your lighting scheme. You really want to have this straight in your head before you get out on location. Go scout your location ahead of time if you have the luxury to do that. It makes a big difference, not only in the final product, but in the process while you're working. And all the things that you can do to keep your stress level down while you're shooting makes you more affable and easier to get along with, and will help keep the subjects relaxed. If you start stressing, right, because you didn't think of something and you're caught by surprise, they will feel that and they will tighten up as well. And number five, two cameras, four lenses. This is a formula that I've been using for a while. So once you analyze the assignment and realize what your lighting is going to be and all that kind of stuff, then you can choose your lenses and cameras. I like to have a multi-purpose zoom lens on one camera body. And if I'm shooting indoors, it's usually a faster and shorter zoom lens. If I'm working outside, it might cover a wider range with a little longer reach. But that camera with that zoom lens that you can depend on, you know, that's usually my starting point when I first start taking shots. Then as I get into the shoot, then I will usually go to the other camera that has a prime lens on it. And again, if I'm doing portraits, it's going to be a portrait prime lens. If I'm working indoors and trying to gather more space, it's going to be a prime lens that's wider. You know, it just depends. But a lot of times I like to have a second lens option. Just like when you're making a movie, a lot of times you want to have two cameras. One that is a little bit closer and focuses on a certain detail, and one that's a little broader. I like to do the same thing with the cameras. And by having the lenses already mounted on the cameras, I can work much faster. It's much easier than digging around for the lenses and then, you know, trying to mount them on one camera. Having the lenses already mounted, then having one additional lens for each camera really will keep you moving quick. You'll be more efficient. And again, you will be more relaxed. So that's the basic workflow. You know, if you do those steps, then when you do get the surprises, you'll be better equipped to deal with them, and I think they will have less of an adverse impact on you. A couple other things that come to mind is make sure you have business cards with you, because hopefully people will ask for one. And they come in so handy, not only for the people that you're working with, let's say a subject that you meet, and they go, hey, do you have a card? You know, I have this thing coming up, and maybe you can help me with it. Maybe it's an assignment that you would love to do or something like that. You just want to have those cards on the ready for people. Also, when people are questioning, should you be there or not? And go, well, yeah, I'm working for, you know, this business. You know, my name's Derek Storing, professional photographer. Here's my card. you do that, and it's funny, suddenly the door opens, okay? Business cards are just really handy for all sorts of things. Make sure that you have them with you and that they're accessible. The other thing I will say is make sure you dress appropriately, whatever that happens to be. If you dress appropriately for the situation, you'll be more comfortable. And again, I know I keep stressing for you to be more comfortable, but that's such a big deal because the more comfortable you are, the more creative you can be. But then also you want to make the, you know, the proper impact on, you know, the subjects and the client and all that kind of stuff. So I know that we're artists and that, you know, we're, you know, we have our own thing and all that. That's great. But, you know, within, you know, the guidelines of making other people comfortable while we're there, a lot of times I have to say I can get away with just a collared shirt and nice Levi's, not ones with holes in them. Nice Levi's that still have, you know, the blue color in them. And, you know, decent shoes. That's really basically, you know, my starting point. That's all I need. And then I can go from there. If you're going to be outside and you're going to be in the sun a lot, you know, make sure you have a hat. Make sure you have your sunglasses. That kinds of stuff. Think about your clothing, not just your camera gear, you know, when you're getting ready for the shoot. Don't forget your water bottle and power bars, because if the assignment goes longer, and they do sometimes, you need to keep your energy up. You need to stay hydrated. Sometimes you need a little bit of food in your stomach, and you know, you're not able to run off and have lunch, even though it's 2 p.m. So make sure you have stuff with you so that if things kind of change, you can change with them and still be highly functional. Once the shoot is over, you know, one thing that I want to say is don't skimp on post-production. The way that I do this is that first I go through and I make my selects. So if I have 1,000 images, I usually try to narrow it down to around 200, unless the client has a different need. So I try to go from 1,000 to 200. And then those 200, my selects, that's what I edit. So then I go through and I edit them. Once I edit them, I let them sit. I go do something else, go work on another project, go record a podcast, you know, whatever it happens to be. Then I come back and I review them as a slideshow. And the reason why I do a slideshow is as you watch them flow from one image to another, you can really spot, you know, areas where your continuity isn't good, where suddenly the white balance is, you know, has a warmish effect in this series, and then it gets really cool or really green, you know, in this series, and it's kind of jarring, and you go, oh, wow, I didn't really notice that when I was working on them individually. A slideshow will highlight all those things. While you're watching the slideshow, make notes of the images or the series of images that you want to go back and work on some more. Then you go back and work on those some more. Try to pull them in line with the other so that you have this continuity that you want to deliver. Then you watch the slideshow again after you've done this. And then usually you'll start to see that continuity that you're looking for. It's also a good time to pull out the dogs. You know, you'll have, you know, 8 great shots of this, you know, one scene. And then the 9th one is go, wow, I thought that was a good shot, but now that I look at it in the context of all the other shots, I don't think it should be in there. Take it out. Take it out. If you don't think it should be in there, if it makes you pause, it's probably going to make the client pause as well. Don't throw it away. You can hang on to it. You can pull it out if you need it later on, but I wouldn't make that as part of the first delivery. All righty. Once I go all the way through the slideshow and I'm happy, then I can export out of the app and prepare the deliverable for the client. And that way I have a look that is both consistent and beautiful. If you do these things that I've been talking about and you do them with a cheerful, professional attitude, chances are very good that you will hang on to your existing clients, and with a little luck, you'll gain a few new ones as well. A recent survey reveals wedding photographers spend only 4% of their time taking photos. This is an article, I think it's been floating around a bit. It's on DP Review, and I have a link to the entire article. So I'll tell you what the other 96% is right now, and then we'll get into a couple more details about this. The other 96% are culling, editing, business admin, and communication. Hey, a lot of stuff I just finished talking about in the previous story, right? And the biggest chunk, not surprisingly, and this is for wedding photographers, not surprisingly, was editing, the actual editing the images themselves. And I agree. I think when I used to do more wedding shoots, it was amazing how much more time I spent editing the images than I do for PR shoots or editorial shoots. You know, they're just weddings, just by nature, just require a bit more editing time. You know, this is an aside here, but this also makes me think fondly back on the film years, because what we used to do is shoot the wedding and we have whatever, 20 rolls of film. I would have the envelopes with me for the commercial lab. I'd fill out the envelopes, you know, you put like 5 rolls in an envelope. And then I would drive to the commercial lab. They'd have a mail drop slot, a night drop slot. I'd put the film in the slot, and then we'd go to Denny's. You know what I mean? Then we'd go to Denny's, and then the lab does all the work. They process the negatives. They do the proofs. They do the color correction. You know, they take care of all that stuff. They call me when it's ready, whatever, 4 or 5 days later, and I'd pick it up. I'd get them all nice and organized. I, you know, pull out the shots that, you know, shouldn't be in there. And I set up the meeting with the client. Ah, man, those were the good days. So, you know, digital photography doesn't always save us time. Sometimes it adds time to the process. You know, being a film photographer with a good lab, boy, that was nice stuff in the days of weddings. Anyway, okay. So where did this information come from? So this was a UK-based company, Your Perfect Wedding Photographer, recently conducted its 4th annual industry survey. Although more than 300 full-time wedding photographers participated in the survey, it's important to remember that the findings reflect a small segment of local wedding photographers, and the results may be more typical for a specific region rather than the industry as a whole. Okay, so there's your disclaimer. That being said, here's a few interesting tidbits. And this was a UK-based company. The average number of weddings captured in a year, and this was in 2019, was 28, down 1 from 29 in 2018. Okay, average number of weddings, 28. That's pretty good. That's pretty good, I have to say. The average cost of a full-day starting package was, in U.S. dollars, $2,063. And that was up $40 actually from 2018. So about $2,000, okay? 40% of the photographers use Canon cameras, 31% Nikon, 22% Sony, and 7% Fuji from this select group of photographers. The average age of those surveyed was 39 years old, up 1 year from 38 in 2018, and 44% of the respondents were women and 56% were men. Okay. You know, we're talking about assignments on this podcast and working out in the field, and I thought this was interesting. So that is the world of wedding photography. It's a challenging business out there. Just some interesting tidbits that I thought you might enjoy from the world of wedding photography. I have a few updates from our 2020 photography workshop season. We're going out to LA on March 13th through 15th for our LA street photography experience. I was already looking very forward to that workshop, and now I'm looking even more forward to it because I have a Fujifilm X100V, the latest one that's, I don't think, even shipping yet, not as of this podcast. I have one with me. And I'm going to take it out to the workshop. And I think it would be a nice addition to the other gear that Mike and I are going to be talking about. I can show you the ins and outs of the X100V. It's really a cool camera and it's perfect for street photography. I'm going to have one there. So that's very exciting. So those of you that are joining me, guess what? We're going to be looking at that as well. We have Humboldt Redwoods coming up on May 12th through 14th. Those of you that I've been working with on it, we're getting the accommodations squared away. This workshop's coming together beautifully. I still have one seat open. We had a person move from this workshop to a different workshop. So I opened up a seat on the reserve list. So if you go to the nimblephotographer.com and just go over there to workshops, you'll see that you can join this one still. It's May 12th through 14th. This workshop is terrific. It's a good vibe workshop. On the Lassen Volcanic Park photo workshop, and this is where we stay at Lake Almanor. We have a seat open there as well, and this is like going to another land. It really is. Not only Lassen itself, but the whole area there, including Lake Almanor. And, you know, this location that we have is wonderful. This is just a great place to hang out. This cabin is great. We eat a lot of our meals there. We have a wonderful work area. The rooms are really comfortable. And again, you know, you get away from the rest of the world and you're out there. You have the starry nights. We're going to do some night photography. We've planned it so that it will be good for night photography. We have this interesting, fascinating Lassen landscape. We have the beautiful lake landscape of Lake Almanor, and we have more. And so we still have a seat open for that, and that is July 16 through 18. It's a very special event. And again, if the timing is good for you, you might want to come out and join us. And then, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, October 1 through 3 is going to be our Eastern Sierra workshop. This, over the years, has been one of our most popular workshops. We've done this a number of times. I haven't been there now for a couple of years. You know, we base ourselves, you know, in Bridgeport, California. We have a great place to stay. And we really have some iconic locations that we're going to be visiting, like Mono Lake. And if we hit the color right, then we're going to have that as a bonus, too. Again, October 1 through 3, we have a couple seats open for that one. That is a special event, and it'd be a great way to, you know, end your summer going into the off season, October 1 through 3, up in the Eastern Sierra. Again, go to nimblephotographer.com if you're interested in any of these. Right, a little virtual camera club business. First of all, I want to thank our Inner Circle members. They're the ones that support us month in and month out, keep this podcast on the air. A tip of the lens cap to every one of you. I've got something new coming up for you, so make sure you pay attention to those messages that show up in your email from Patreon. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member and supporting this show, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. And finally, I want to mention our good friends at Red River Paper, one-stop shopping for inkjet printing. This is the place you go when you want to finish off the process of being an artist, when you want to go from, you know, taking the picture to developing the picture, then to printing the picture so that you have a piece of artwork. You can put it on the wall. You can have it on your desk. You can give it to somebody else as a gift. You can put it in a frame. You can make a fine art greeting card with it. You can make a calendar. You can do all these wonderful things with your images. Don't leave them stuck on your hard drive. Get them off your hard drive and out into the world and beyond just Instagram. And Red River Paper can help you do that. They have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story. Just click on that tile or go to their Facebook page, facebook.com/redriverpaper. Remember, it's not just the paper, it's not just the ink, but they have the knowledge there. They can help you become the fine art artist that maybe you've always dreamed of being. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure. Come back next week. I've got some great stuff. Until then, have a fantastic week. Bye-bye now.